I started my review of the film by saying that there is a special room in hell for filmmakers who make simple films for kids. And by simple, I mean unimaginative direction and flat scripts and storylines that go from A to B without a whole lot of interest or any depth. And this film is anything but that. This film is blissfully unlike that. Talk a little about your attitude towards making a film for kids that works for adults and for everybody.
Well, I think you have to first start with books for kids that are not talking down to them, and Lewis can talk about that.
I think most people underestimate kids' intelligence and depth because maybe they don't articulate themselves very well. So I always treat my readers with just great respect and never try to write down to them, and just try to write what I like and just make it accessible for all ages.
You know, when I read Holes, I never felt that it was a children's book. It was a book that had children in it, but the themes were for everybody. And in approaching the movie, I knew there would be an audience of young people who loved the book or were going to want to see the movie, but we made it as a film for everybody also. And in the screenings we've been having with teachers and educators and kids, you know, people are responding in a way that the adults even get more of it than the kids do. It's like those old wonderful movies that were made by Miss Piggy. You know, it's like The Muppets, where there was a level of humor and sophistication for the adults, and the kids could still enjoy it. So I think that what's wonderful about Lewis's work and the script and hopefully how we did this film is there is a level of sophistication. I've always tried to make films that don't talk down to the audience.
This film has a lot of very tough topics in it. Nice people die on screen. There's racism. There's homelessness. Some of the kids are throwaway kids that we see in this camp. Talk about how you present that on camera, but still allow what I call a safe emotional zone for kids and for adults who are watching this.
Well, it's you have to be subtle in some ways. You know, we didn't want to run away. We couldn't run away from the themes of this book because that's what makes it powerful, and that's why we wanted to do it. At the same time, we didn't want to terrify or scare young children. We have a PG rating. It's a Walt Disney film, which we're very happy about because it means that the whole world will feel it's acceptable and safe to go see this movie. At the same time, it's provocative. So our hats off to Disney for standing behind this interesting piece of material. They knew, of course, it was a beloved book. It's being read all over the world and required reading now in schools all over America.
And in some polls, it tops Harry Potter. And when you were writing the book, talk about that, because, of course, before it was a film, it was a book.
Yeah. Well, there was a very tragic death, and it occurs. The story takes place over three different time periods, and this story is 100 years ago. And so I quickly cut away to present day, you know, kind of with the implication, well, that happened 100 years ago, and it was very sad. But it seems less painful, the fact that it was in the past. But, you know, One aspect that I'm proud of with the movie and the book is that the death is sad, and it's not, you know, so many movies, you know, these shoot 'em up movies where killing is just treated like a video game. And in this movie, we don't make light of someone being killed.
One of the themes that I really love about this story is the persistence of the past and how the past informs the present. As some famous Southern writer once said, the past isn't even really the past.
Well, we have the family curse. So Stanley's great-great-grandfather was supposedly cursed, and that's why Stanley is always in the wrong place at the wrong time. So a lot of the fun of, I mean, you know, this thing has been sounding like it's this grim story. It's for the most part a fun story, and part of the fun is discovering, you know, it's not told in a linear way. It's told, you gradually discover why the boys are digging holes, how they came to be, and the revelation of it is part of the fun of the story.
You took a year and a half to write the book.
Yes.
How long did it take you to write the screenplay?
Well, the screenplay was written in a lot of starts and stops because I was hired to write the screenplay, and I was hired to do a draft, and then I had to wait and be hired to do another draft and so forth. So from the time I first started writing it till the time they started shooting, which when I did my final draft while the shoot was going on, it was about 3 years.
What are the pleasures and perils of adapting your own book?
The greatest pleasure to me was getting to work with so many talented people. You know, normally I sit alone in my room and write, and it was great working with the actors, working with Andrew Davis, working with the set designer, the great stuff they came up with. It felt good to be part of a team doing some really good work.
And the perils?
Well, there was this constant fear that this book that I hear from kids all the time and from his parents saying that, you know, my kid never liked to read until he read your book. And so it had become this this part of American culture. And if the movie was this sort of turned into a lousy movie, then it would sort of kill the book in some way. So I was very worried about that.
What do you think now when you see the film?
I'm surprised by how much I like the film.
Really?
You know, because I can't read my own books. I know the stories too well. There's no way. People always ask, do you like reading your own books? And, you know, I can't. But I'm surprised I can watch the movie over and over again and really enjoy it.
And what was it like being on the set while all this was filming?
It was a blast.
Even though it was sort of like a blast furnace, wasn't it?
At times. There was several different locations. And the one out in the desert, you know, was 120 degrees. But, you know, we had water, we had food, you know. And my daughter was on the set with me a lot, and she just had a lot of fun. It was great to be part of this giant team of just very talented people and just watching them work. And occasionally, you know, I'd have something to say, but mostly I was just sitting, watching, fascinated by everyone.
Yeah. What's it like seeing your characters walking around, having their own separate existence?
It's very surreal.
What sort of input did you have on the set, or what did you allow him to have? Perhaps would be another way to put it.
Well, I learned fairly quickly, because Andy was so busy with everybody coming with him with their problems and their ideas, that I had to really pick my battles carefully. And I'd wait for something I really cared about, and then I'd approach him with it and tell him whether I thought it was something that I didn't think was working. And he'd listen to me and he'd make his decision, but very often he'd follow my advice, or at least try, you know, he's shooting it so many times, he'd try my suggestion.
What's an example of that?
I'm trying to remember now. Do you remember any?
My father's in the movie, plays Grandpa, and there's a very touching scene where Zero meets his mother, who he's been separated from. And Lewis and Teresa, one of the producers who worked closely with us on the script, said, your dad should be crying. I don't know, you know. So we did a take where they put some drops in his eyes, you know, and my father's response was, this is a bunch of beep, beep, yeah. and then it's in the movie. It was a touching moment where, you know, Grandpa was emotionally touched by the fact that this kid had found his mother.
I want to talk a little more in depth about actually filming this, because you were working under less than ideal conditions for part of it.
Well, first of all, you're dealing with kids who have limitations on how many hours a day they can work. So that was an issue. We couldn't, you know, shoot everything in one place. We had to do all of the holes section in this very, very hot, dry lake bed, 120 degrees, windstorms, 40 miles an hour with dust flying everywhere. And the crew was very, very cooperative. The kids were great. But we had to protect each other. Everybody sort of looked out for each other making this movie. And in spite of some tough conditions here and there, because the book was so beloved, everybody was drawn to the material, and there's a real esprit de corps about making this movie. It was fun working with the kids. For the most part, they were real pros. Shia LaBeouf, who's got a lot of experience in this TV series, Even Stevens, sort of set the mark for what professional acting was for kids.
He plays Stanley Yelnats IV.
Stanley Yelnats IV. But then you had John Voight, Academy Award-winning actor, working with these unknowns, and he respected them so much. You know, and he said, you know, talent's talent. Doesn't matter how old you are. So it was a dream cast. But we had to deal with lizards, creating lizards who were scary and could bite you. And we had to deal with animals, pigs, scorpions, donkeys. We had to deal with having some digital things that weren't there in front of us that were going to be created later. And I don't like doing movies that have a lot of special effects, because the effects sort of dictate how the film is being made rather than the director, you know. But in general, it was one of the best experiences I've ever had as a director in 13 movies, because of the caring everybody had for the project.
Yeah, you have directed Steven Seagal and Tommy Lee Jones and done huge action films. Collateral Damage was one of your recent ones. This is such an interesting change of pace for you. Is this something that's much closer to your heart, or is the action genre something you'd like to go back to at some point?
Well, you know, I didn't start off to be an action director. Matter of fact, my first film was a coming-of-age film, a little film called Stony Island that was about my brother growing up on the south side of Chicago as a white kid in a black neighborhood, making it as a musician. And it got a lot of attention and won some awards. And then I did a film called Code of Silence and made a lot of money with Chuck Norris and Dennis Farina. And I got pegged as an action director. you know, I sort of didn't mind that at the time because I had done a lot of films as a cameraman. I worked for Roger Corman's brother, Gene Corman, with Paul Bartel and George Armitage on a bunch of action films when I was young. And I had the ability to sort of take a background and interest I had in journalism and politics and inject that in some of these action films. Topical issues that dealt with Iran-Contra, that dealt with Soviet-American relations in The Package with Gene Hackman. I did a film when I did The Fugitive with Harrison Ford. It was an action film. It was a big chase movie. But there was a story about a drug protocol going on in there, the manipulation of a drug. Richard Kimball's wife was murdered because he knew too much about some drug that may have made a lot of money for somebody if it was approved. So I was able to do that. Now, at the same time, I've always liked to do films that have heart and that can make people think and feel about things. And that's what this book holds was able to do. And when I read it, I said, God, it's not only is it impeccably crafted, it's got a lot of soul. And Lewis Sacker has a lot of soul as a writer. So it was a challenge. And yet, you know, when my wife and my kids read it, they said, God, Dad, you ought to do this. This would be great for you to do.
Yeah, you must be at a point in your career where you can pretty much pick and choose and you can make projects happen.
Well, there are very few directors who can pick and choose. I mean, Steven Spielberg made, but because he owns a studio, you know. But it's when you work on something, you're going to spend 2 years of your life minimally on it. You want to make a movie that people are going to see and not feel that the people who put up the money lost their money doing it and voted it in the wrong racehorse, you know. So it's hard. I mean, well, this movie, I think, was made because the book was such a hit. And if we would have walked in off the street with a script based upon this story, they would have said, are you out of your mind? Three different time periods and, you know, all these zany characters. And that's what gives it charm. So playing the game of how to figure out how to get the best movie made for the biggest audience is real magic.
And it's wonderful that it has a built-in audience.
Well, I've just been on this long national tour with Lewis, and it's amazing. He's like the Mick Jagger of writers. You know, you go into a bookstore, and the kids start shrieking. This is the guy who wrote all of my favorite books, you know. Over and over, teachers have said, thank you, Lewis, because this is the book that got my kids who never wanted to read to read.
There was a teacher there last night who said something along those lines.
Right.
And there is a teaching guide for this.
There's a teaching guide. And it's interesting because my mother, in fact, worked for 25 years in the Chicago public school system teaching kids how to read.
And so you're continuing her work in a strange kind of way.
Well, I think, you know, this the idea of history and curses and blessings and destiny, you know, that, you know, you inherit things and you take what you want of that and then you react to those things that you inherit and you run away from them. So it's part of our fate.
What's it like for camera and crew when you're dealing with sand and 40-mile-an-hour winds, and how much sunscreen did you go through in the desert?
Well, I actually have had skin cancer myself, and I'm fine. But you know, I like to sail. I was a lifeguard and taught water skiing when I was a kid. We were very aware of what we did research. For example, there's a RIT dye that you can put in your wash that helps UV issues. There's certain colors that are better to wear. Light blue is a good color to wear. We had people out there doing nothing but giving water to people all the time. We had pop-up tents with fans that had mist of moisture in there to help hydrate people. So it was a very conscientious effort to protect people and keep out of the sun. In spite of that, some of the extras were in these little holes. It was like 120 degrees sometimes in these holes. So we were only out there for about a third of the movie, and we shot in 55 days, so, you know, so 18 days we were out there shooting in these holes. And sometimes it was like wacko. We would be shooting, and they would say, incoming, and this huge dust devil would be coming from the distance. You could see it, and people would jump into buses and trucks, and other people would just sort of stand there, you know.
How much digging did the actors actually do? Because we see them in the holes a lot, and we see them holding shovels a lot.
Well, they're actually, every time you see them digging, they're digging. They didn't dig. We dug 450 holes with a coring device, and then we had the art department go around and sort of hand touch them up to make them look like they were really done by hand. But then digitally, we created like 10,000 holes. And the kids we had a boot camp for these kids. They trained. They got in shape. They learned to get to know each other. And all the time we were making the movie, they had calloused hands, they knew how to dig, you know, it was second nature to them by the time we got out there.
Did you do any digging yourself? You know, just sort of to throw yourself into the gestalt.
I did do some digging, and I was cursing Louis Sacker because in the movie, you need a 5-foot shovel to dig a 5x5x5 foot hole. Well, it's near impossible to swing a 5-foot shovel back and forth in a hole that's only 5 feet.
That's true.
I said, did you ever try to dig a hole before you got us all doing this? I said, no, I didn't do it.
One of the things the boys have to cope with, it was mentioned before, are yellow-spotted lizards, which don't actually exist. They're very venomous in the story. If you bite them, you die. Who actually painted the spots on the yellow-spotted lizards? They have exactly 11.
Yes. I think it was a combination of our animal wrangler and our prop department, and maybe makeup and what was involved in it. I'm not sure, but it was a non-toxic paint. The lizards didn't mind. And they were treated with the utmost dignity. They're Australian bearded dragons is the name of the lizard we used. Yeah. And in the movie, I think about 90% of them are real lizards and 10% are digitally enhanced.
Two of the actors have to have them crawling all over them.
Correct.
So what's it like directing lizards and actors wearing them?
Well, it was pretty zany because we never knew what was going to happen. There was one very, very funny moment where I was actually holding the camera myself and I was trying to direct. And the lizards were crawling all over the kids. And one of the lizards started eating Cleo Thomas's hair, Zero's hair. And I was saying, quit laughing. And I was laughing myself, you know. We were all giggling. And I was shaking the camera. So it was a very funny scene.
I have to ask about Cleo Thomas. He is an extraordinarily gifted actor. And given that you cast him because of that reason, was also a little part of it maybe for that just amazing mop of hair he has.
He has this wonderful mop of hair, and I think Cleo Thomas is going to emerge from this movie as a real hot kid, and he deserves it. And Shia LaBeouf, his father's a Cajun, and his mother's a Jew, and he's grown up around circuses and theater and all kinds of arty stuff all of his life. And I was looking for a young Dustin Hoffman, Gene Wilder, Tom Hanks combination, and that's who I think I got. I think this kid's going to be huge.
This may be a very silly question, too. John Voight's character, Mr. Sir, has this very peculiar gait. How did you work that out with John Voight?
John Voight worked that out for himself.
Did he?
Yeah. I mean, John Voight he got so immersed in this part, from the voice to the look to the walk to the details of the props. I mean, this is what a great actor does. I mean, and there was no model like Howard Cosell. It wasn't like he could go look at a bunch of old footage as he did for Michael Mann. You know, he'd say, what do you think? And I'd say, great. Or we would refine it a little bit here and there. And after a while, I got into it as the director. And this was my character. It wasn't John Voight anymore. It was Mr. Sir. And I had a ring for how he could talk. As a matter of fact, there's a scene in the movie where he's in the kitchen. And he's upset because he's got scratched by the warden. And the guy in the background, who's the cook, who's talking to him, is actually me, doing this kind of southern talk, you know, talking about onions and hocus pocus and having all this. And it was dialect that I had gotten from a friend of mine named Ronnie Barron from New Orleans, who was a famous musician, played with Dr. John. And John Voight used to say to me, Andy, you got the ring for it. Give me some lines. Give me some more of those funny words you're coming up with.
At one point, Stanley Yelnats II, who is the grandfather, played by your father in the film, says that you can be really smart, but what you really need is luck. And I thought that was interesting in a film that talks a lot about fate. Talk a little about that.
Well, it's interesting. He says in the movie, like you say, is luck, something we ain't got. And then at the end of the movie, when the curse is lifted, Stanley says to Zero, let's dig another hole. And he says, why? Zero says, why? And Stanley says, because I feel lucky. There's also a conversation about destiny in there. So the question is luck destiny, or is luck just luck? I don't know. I know that certain people seem like they're born with the wrong, you know, cards dealt to them. But then a lot of times, you know, people just don't work hard enough, or they're hanging around with the wrong people, or they don't have focus, or they weren't given the proper childhood, so they have the sense of values or work ethic or peace of mind, you know. So who's to say? I don't really know. This idea of fate and destiny is going to go on forever, and you know, and in spite of everybody's belief in the higher powers, you know, the way it looks like from a physical point of view, there may come a time when nobody will ever know we were here except for the big character in the sky. You know, when all the oxides and all the dust and the earth is melted on itself, you know, so.
And it's one of the things I like about this film, because you walk out of it and you're thinking, you got a lot to chew on philosophically when you come out of it. And yet, it has a painless delivery system, which is how I like to characterize it.
Thank you.
Andy Davis, thank you so much for talking with us.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.